Welcome to Women in Politics, recorded here in the studios of WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond's independent radio. I'm Carol Olson, your host. Women in Politics. It's a platform to bring women together to talk about their engagement in politics, what's important to them in our community, and what they want our representatives and delegates to hear. And today's guest, I have with me Jessica David, who is the field director of the Virginia House of Democrats, and Katie Baker, who is the communications director for the Democratic Party of Virginia and the Virginia House. And we are back with the second part of our interview. We talk about national politics and its effects. And as we have a Republican president, or some people might think he's stepped beyond Republican, and with a Republican majority, how do you think that's going to filter down to local politics? Or looking ahead in regards to human rights, gender rights and protections, identity protections, the status of immigrants and refugees, and the relationship of business to government?
Sure. I mean, I think it is tremendously connected. Between what's happening at the federal level is very tightly connected to what's happening here in Virginia. And you'll find that, you know, at the state legislative level, you know, that Republicans are running away. You know, they are running scared, and that's for a reason. Like, they are trying to tell us that, oh, you know, federal issues have, you know, no bearing on what we do here in Richmond. You know, that's absolutely untrue. In fact, what we're doing here in Richmond has even more importance because of what's happening at the federal level. We don't have the same checks anymore. We don't have the same protections of the, you know, that the we had with the Obama administration. You know, so just for, you know, one example, I mean, Trump is trying to defund Planned Parenthood. So if all federal money stop coming to Planned Parenthood, you know, at least there would still be some state money coming to Planned Parenthood. As we just talked about before, you know, that bill to defund Planned Parenthood at the state level really hung, you know, just on a couple votes. And it required us having a Democratic governor, and it required us having Democrats in the House of Delegates. So it is, you know, in terms of all the anti-immigrant, you know, sentiment, Trump administration has really perpetuated and amplified. What the Republicans do, you know, at the state level and the state legislature, you know, has all the more impact and importance. And you see Republicans pandering really anti-immigrant legislation and really trying to turn the conversation to that because they don't want to talk about their failed record on the economy. And they don't want to talk about how bad they've been on women's issues or others' issues. So they try to find scapegoats, just as, you know, Donald Trump has, you know, issues like health care. That's probably the most, you know, time-sensitive one. You know, today, Republicans in the House of Delegates refused to expand Medicaid. I mean, that denied health care to 400,000 people. And now if Trump care becomes law, that opportunity to expand, you know, the bill that passed the House of Delegates, that opportunity to expand Medicaid will be gone forever. You know, the bill that passed in the House, the Trump care bill that passed in the House, it also includes a, you know, provision that would allow states to waive out of requirements that would waive out of the requirement that insurance companies do not charge people more or discriminate against people who have pre-existing conditions. Well, if we don't have a Democratic governor, if we don't have Democrats in the House of Delegates, you know, that's something that could really have an effect here in Virginia. That is really scary. I mean, Trump care, you know, could become the law of the land. And we need some brick wall here in Virginia, like more than ever, to protect us against the harmful policies of that administration, you know, and choice. I mean, we don't know who else Trump is going to support, who's going to nominate to the Supreme Court. That's really scary. I mean, Roe v. Wade hangs in the balance, depending on future nominations that Trump makes to the Supreme Court. And, you know, we have a very anti-choice General Assembly right now, or House of Delegates right now. And that's really terrifying, too, if we also get an anti-choice governor. Okay, so we have a president who has said in the past that he thinks women should be punished for abortions. We have two chambers of Congress who are going to support him. He's got the power to make nominees to the Supreme Court, which, you know, is another, should be another brick wall of protection, but, you know, now that's in jeopardy. And then we have Republicans in the House of Delegates who have introduced a 20-week abortion ban this year. You know, they passed a Stay of Tears resolution, which has no practical effect. It just expresses their sentiment that they wish to shame women. You know, we need more Democrats in the House of Delegates to be able to, and a Democratic governor, to be able to be that brick wall against the Trump administration and its harmful policies.
It's interesting when you look at Trump and Republicans, or Republicans at this far to the right, saying that their goal is to have less government. But
everything that's happening really looks like it's more and more government and restricting people's ability to think and choose and move and through society and access things they need. Do you think that's true?
Oh, absolutely. Just like the degree of intrusiveness. I mean, in Virginia, we're talking about the party that introduced this incredibly invasive transvaginal ultrasound requirement for women seeking abortions that, thanks to grassroots energy and pressure, was killed. But that's state-sponsored rape, honestly. Like, the intrusion of what a transvaginal ultrasound entails is should only be the choice of a woman and absolutely nobody else, you know, not Republicans in the House of Delegates who are predominantly white men telling women that that's what you need to do before you seek your constitutional right to have an abortion.
What do you think there are other impacts of restricting rights and access will have, you know, on our communities, both socially and economically?
Sure. I mean, I think that there's going to be a huge economic impact if those things come to fruition. You know, if women don't have the autonomy to decide when they're going to have a child, that influences their decision to decide whether they work, where they work, what jobs they take. Abortions are often an economic decision. And it's just really going to have a negative economic impact on families and communities, you know, and same with the other legislation that Republicans have killed this session. You know, the paid family leave legislation, you know, that's something that, you know, while it benefits families by giving them, you know, economic opportunity, you know, it also benefits our economy as a whole, you know, by making sure that people are secure when they're going through, you know, some sort of life transition or family catastrophe. And, you know, Republicans have a horrible, I mean, not only are they horrible on women's issues, but they're horrible on economic issues as a whole.
You're listening to Women in Politics, recorded in the studios of WRIRLP 97.3 FM.
Democrats this legislative session introduced a couple reform packages on student loans that would help borrowers refinance student loans through a state entity that would help them get lower interest rates. That's a huge economic issue in Virginia. Virginians collectively owe over $1 billion in student loan debt. And that's something that's affecting our communities at large, because when we have high student loan payments, and I still have student loans.
Same.
You know, we're not able to, or we're less able to be able to buy a home, to be able to buy cars, to be able even to, you know, go out to eat and patronize our local restaurants. And that's something that has a tremendous impact on communities, you know, and that Democrats have really been fighting for. And that's also about opportunity. If people are worried about student loan debt, they are less inclined to finish college or to go to college at all. I read something probably a couple months ago in the Richmond Times-Dispatch about how college enrollment rates in Virginia are dropping, you know, even as high school graduation is increasing. And, you know, while there hasn't been a study accounting for why, you know, don't think it's a stretch to say it's probably because of the high cost of college. We want people, not just people who are in the upper economic echelon, to be able to go to school and graduate without crushing student loan debt so that they can get jobs and higher paying jobs, you know, are going to yield more revenue for, you know, these types of programs anyway to help with lowering student loan debt and student loan interest rates. You know, so that's another thing that was killed in the committee process this legislative session that I think is really important both to women and to families at large. While we certainly need more jobs, we need more jobs that will pay well. And the key to that is through education.
What do you think are the issues that continue to divide women across political? I mean, we've talked a lot about, isn't every woman caring about equal pay? Doesn't every woman care about reproductive choice? Doesn't every woman or family care about access to education and resources? But what are the issues that still divide us across party lines?
You know, that's a really good question. And I certainly don't want to speak for, quote unquote, every woman. I think that, you know, there's so many issues that unite us that, you know, certainly we need to do a better job as Democrats at getting our message out to people, and not just our base, you know, not just, you know, Democratic voters who are enraged with Donald Trump, as I am, but also, you know, reaching out to people who may have been Trump voters or who may have been, you know, people who identify as Republicans, but, you know, don't really like Donald Trump. And we need to do a better job of getting out our core economic message to them. That's not partisan. And that's, you know, we're the party of hardworking people fighting for hardworking people. And that's about as nonpartisan, I think, as you can get. And I think that, you know, sometimes it's difficult to get out that message, you know, when you're constantly, you know, responding to the horrible things, you know, Republicans are doing. And I still think that we need to be responding to them. Like, you know, somebody needs to hold Donald Trump accountable. You know, somebody needs to hold Republicans in Congress and in the House of Delegates accountable when they're doing things that are going to hurt families or when they're doing things that marginalize vulnerable groups. But when that happens, I think sometimes our message gets a little bit diluted or drowned out when we're talking about, you know, fighting for working people and, you know, individual, you know, reproductive freedom. And I think that there are just so many issues and that it's really incumbent, you know, on us to, you know, not let them get diluted, but to do a better job of showing how they're all connected.
I think we want the same things, right? I think we want a strong economy, good, safe schools to raise our families and to, you know, live the American dream. But I think that the, you know, sometimes the things that divide us are more how we get there. And maybe if we come from a place of, you know, we all want these things and, you know, this is our plan to get there. And, you know, I think that's really where we can reach across the aisle and, you know, attract more people into the party and, you know, show that it's not, it doesn't have to be this polarized.
I don't know if it's been this polarized in our history where
No.
We've moved further and further apart where people from different political parties can hardly have conversations anymore. What do you think it will take to do what you're talking about, reach across the aisle? I mean, that's such a simple term because that meant people were sitting in the same room. But now it doesn't appear that people are sitting in the same room.
So I think one thing that can really have an impact on this and that has had an impact on this over the past several decades is redistricting and gerrymandering. In Virginia in particular, a state that has gone blue statewide for so long, to have this steep a minority for Democrats in the House of Delegates is pretty wild, and it's not right. And it's not because of anything more than the district lines are set up to keep the Republicans in power. And the more that we cut these lines to silo, you know, different groups of people into one or the other, the less that these communities that are, you know, right next to each other get to communicate and have to communicate. And I think the more that we have fair lines and fair districts, you know, I think that will force people to really work with each other and might open up the dialogue a little more than it has been for a very long time.
What do you think the progress toward reducing gerrymandering is right now? How close are we to getting there?
There were multiple opportunities this legislative session for Republicans to pass nonpartisan redistricting reform, and they killed every single proposal that was brought forth. I think there was maybe one bill and then a few constitutional amendments, and most of them were killed in unrecorded voice votes. And we did manage, you know, through a procedural mechanism to bring forth a couple unrecorded voice votes, and I don't think there was a single Republican who voted with us. So, you know, they certainly were in line with their leadership on that, you know, but that's the problem. And, you know, there was, you know, recently a memo that the, you know, Republican Party of Virginia wrote to their high dollar donors that the Washington Post reported on. And one of the things that the memo mentioned was we can't let Democrats have control of the redistricting process. So they're just explicitly putting in writing that this is how they are staying in power.
You're listening to Women in Politics, recorded in the studios of WRIRLP 97.3 FM.
Redistricting should be nonpartisan. There was a survey, I think back in 2013, it was a few years ago, showing that 74% of Virginians support nonpartisan redistricting reform. That's an astronomical number. That's bipartisan support for this. There's been increasing visibility on this issue, you know, largely worked to the group largely due to the work of the group One Virginia 2021 has done a lot of work on this. So, you know, I think, you know, continuing to apply public pressure on this issue, there's also a pending court decision on it that may decide, depending on the outcome of that, we may even see special elections in 2018 if that court says that these districts are not constitutional in the way that they're drawn. So there's a possibility of that coming forth. You know, the other thing, too, to Jessica's point about how gerrymandering makes politics more partisan. I mean, when you have primaries in a gerrymandered district and you have the base coming out, the people who, and I haven't seen this happen as much with Democratic districts, but in Republican districts, I mean, it drives, the nominee is going to be, you know, the furthest right person, you know, and then you see people who are further right displacing people who may be, you know, more to the center. And that, again, contributes to that polarization that we're feeling right now. So that's why, you know, nonpartisan redistricting reform is so important. And, you know, hopefully, you know, we will see that done either, if not through the legislative process, you know, through the judicial process. But again, you know, I would encourage people to pressure your legislators on it, at least anecdotally. That was the issue we had the most constituent outreach about, that people called to talk to their delegates about, was redistricting, because it's essentially rigging the map. And I think people right now are so sick of partisan politicians, you know, who are only looking out for themselves and protecting their seat, that they've really had it, you know, with gerrymandering. And, you know, Republicans this session had multiple opportunities to pass this reform. And, you know, they tried so hard to avoid a vote. In fact, there was one committee meeting in which they wouldn't even recognize the Democrat who had his light on to be recognized to speak to it, because they knew that they were going to kill it. And the room was full of people. It was full of activists who had come out, who wanted a vote on this and who wanted to see it passed. And, you know, it was just really, really unfortunate that they wouldn't, you know, was one instance in which they completely avoided taking a recorded vote at all. So that's definitely something I think that we have just got to see happen. You know, but that said, we have seen so much Democratic energy this year that there is opportunity to win even in tougher districts. You know, Democrats this year are going into rural areas in ways that we never have before. We have more candidates running than ever before. You know, we have, I think we even have, you know, at least one primary in a rural district, you know, outside of Roanoke. I mean, we have a lot of people who are, particularly after Donald Trump's election, you know, who are going to stand up, you know, who have asked themselves, you know, if not me, who, and if not now, when, you know, to really be a voice for working people, you know, in their district. And like, Donald Trump is no friend of working people. You know, he talks a good game about rural, but his proposed budget initially had eliminated all funding for the Appalachian Regional Commission, for example, which is completely dedicated to economic development in, you know, counties that have been identified as Appalachia. You know, so that's just one example of how he's discarded people in rural areas in Appalachia specifically. And I think that voters are going to see that he has nothing to offer them. And we're going to win on the ground. Like, that's really where, you know, I think that, you know, speaks to your earlier question about how do we break through, you know, all the partisan noise and all the polarization. And it's going to be door-to-door, neighbor-to-neighbor. And we saw in Prince William County, there was a special election in which Jackie Smith was just, I think she's, you know, 34-year-old young woman, was just elected a clerk of court up in Prince William County. She was outspent 6-1 by Jackson Miller, who is a current delegate and member of the Republican leadership team. And she, you know, won that election very decisively. And I think that's largely because of all the grassroots energy that we had and people knocking on doors and actually just going back to the basics and talking face to face with their neighbors, you know, because, you know, you're much more, I think, inclined to connect with, you know, somebody who's at your door, who you either know or who lives in your community, you know, than you are with a TV ad or with a piece of mail. And that's, you know, that's really how, you know, Democrats are going to win elections, you know, this year, is on the ground, being propelled by grassroots energy, people who want to come knock on doors, people who want to come talk to their neighbors about all the great candidates we have. And the candidates that we have, are not people who have, I'd say for the vast majority of them, correct me if I'm wrong, Jess, but the vast majority of them are first-time candidates. They're not politicians. We have teachers. We have, I think we have at least one farmer.
A lot of veterans.
Yeah, a lot of veterans. We have people in law enforcement. We have people with business owners. We have people with these very diverse backgrounds who are, just really, coming together and just want to get engaged and want to represent their local communities. That's how we're going to win. Like, that's the path to victory. That's how we get out our message in a way that's authentic and in a way that people, can connect.
I mean, I will say I have, and I'm sure Katie can attest to this too, I've never seen a year like this. I've never seen energy like this. I've been doing this a long time, and I've never seen the kind of enthusiasm that I'm seeing this year about the elections in Virginia and elections all over the country, really. But, I think that this has to be the way that we move forward and the way that we win this year is talking to your neighbors, talking to voters. As much as it's great to see the protests in the street and, people really taking up the charge against Donald Trump and against the Republican agenda, the way that we translate that into votes and into wins is by going out in a community and knocking on doors and, saying, hey, did you know there's an election this year? We've got to elect, our Democratic ticket. We've got to make sure that we get a Democratic governor and that we have a Democratic delegates in the House of Delegates. And, I think that's really the way that we translate this enthusiasm into real work.
You're listening to Women in Politics, recorded in the studios of WRIR-LP 97.3 FM. One more question before we go. Politics has been the realm of males, and particularly white males, forever. And now there's a concerted effort not only to get women involved, but to be more intersectional and have people of color and people representing other minority groups involved. How do you see the landscape overall of politics changing because of this movement to be inclusive and intersectional?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that it's changing politics for the better overall as we are being more inclusive of other communities. And I think it is what moves the conversation further to the left. I mean, within the Democratic Party, I was just talking to a colleague about this the other day. I mean, the way we include and talk about the LGBT community today is just light years away of how Democrats generally, talked about the LGBT community in 2001, which really, in the grand scheme thing of things, wasn't that long ago. And I think, that is, largely, to the credit of groups, for advocating, for themselves. But I also think it's, to the credit of the party just generally evolving and being more inclusive. And that's why it's so important, going back to what we were talking about earlier, that we do make efforts, to have more women, more people of color, more people from the LGBT community at the table, both in terms of our candidates and at the staff level, because that's ultimately, what helps shift the dialogue in a more progressive direction is, by making sure that those communities are included at the table, and I can't, understate, the importance of progressive groups and activists who have done a lot to move the conversation to be much more progressive on, including groups who have been previously, marginalized, even, not that long ago within their own party. So, it's just really important. And, I would close with that thought. Like, that's why it's so important that, people from those communities stay engaged, that they get involved with us. And for people who are considering, running or, working, on a campaign, that you, don't hesitate, go for it, because we need you.
How do people get involved then? If they want to get more involved in moving politics forward or to be more inclusive, but they don't necessarily want to be a candidate, what else can they do?
Knock on doors. Honestly, that's the best thing you can do. Find who's running for delegate in your district. If it's not if there's not a Democrat or if they're running unopposed or something like that, find the nearest race, or reach out to the caucus and we can help you find the nearest race. But, you know, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot more fun than people think it's going to be. In my experience and anywhere that I've ever worked, people who come in and knock doors for the first time, they come back and they say, wow, that was so much more fun than I expected. You know, I didn't think I would have a good time, but I met my neighbors. I talked to people that I would never otherwise have met. And, you know, it's really that simple. And, you know, field wins close elections. And, you know, I think that the energy that we're seeing this year, I really think that's going to be the answer.
Yeah, absolutely. And that really just goes back to, you know, what we were saying before about how are we going to cut through, you know, this polarization and this partisan dialogue. And it's by talking door to door, face to face with our neighbors and our communities about our candidates. You know, so there are many House of Delegates races, you know, unprecedented number who need volunteers helping to knock on doors. And then to put on my DPVA hat for a second, you know, our coordinated campaign will be supporting Democrats up and down the ballot to elect a Democratic governor and Democrats running at every level. And for example, we're taking applications right now for summer fellows. It's on our website, vademocrats.org, where you can go and apply for that if you're interested in being a summer fellow. But we definitely, you know, need people who are going to come out and just talk to people at that face-to-face level.
Any last words before we close?
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, this was so much fun.
Honor.
Thank you. And I hope to have y'all back.
We'd love to come back.
Definitely.
You've been listening to Women in Politics, recorded here in the studios of WRIR-LP 97.3 FM. To hear this show, please go to our blog at womenpoliticsva.blog. To support independent radio, to learn, volunteer, or donate, please go to WRIR.org.